In a world where anyone can launch a podcast, two full-grown men decided they fit into the category of anyone. Not just anyone. The Diesel and Clooney anyones. This is Diesel and Clooney Unpack the World.
Unpack the world. I love it.
It's what we do, Jay.
It's what we do. We unpack the world because
we're anyone.
We're anyone. Anyone.
That
makes that kind of anyone.
I love it. Qualified to have a podcast because we're anyone.
Because everyone qualifies. It fits with this generation, doesn't it? Everyone gets a trophy. Everyone gets a podcast.
Everyone, you get a podcast, and you get a podcast. Everybody gets a podcast. I mean, which, you know, on the positive side, it does mean I love the variety of podasts out there.
There's some the good ones. Choice, Jerry. Yeah. Choice. But by default, since anyone, right? There's some so other many. Ones.
Oh, it's so true.
I'm proud to sit squarely in the middle of that.
Of the anyone category. I mean, really, where do we find the time to listen to everything we want to? And you know, Jerry, speaking of time, Jerry, what a great concept to unpack, because either we don't have enough of it, sometimes we have too much of it. Don't even get me started on the past, the present, and the future.
So are we unpacking time?
This
could go deep. We're getting deep today.
I'm hoping it will. Existential, even, if you will. That's what we're doing. Because I think, Jerry, I already did a segue, but I still just want to.
This is Inception level. It's a segue within a segue.
It's exactly what it is. Because I think the time is something that we both think simultaneously. We take it for granted, and we also obsess over it. And I think we manage to do both at the same time. It's worth unpacking.
I think you just went one layer deeper. Yeah, absolutely. It is one of those things that is constantly present and easy to
can't get rid of it.
You can't get rid of it, but you can completely ignore it. Yeah, like you can. You can forget about it. You can lose track of it, it's like losing track of air, but you don't think about it, right? Like you don't have to think to breathe. You don't have to be consciously aware of it, but it is always there and always surrounding you.
And I would say, Jerry, that it's influenced quite a bit by culture, because it's a man-made construct. It's, you know, a measurement that we've imposed. I think we can have lots of arguments on that, because you know, it is a gravity and time and
we can get
way beyond my pay grade with all that. But I think at least in the realms of how we interpret it, that's a very cultural thing. And I think it's always fascinating to me how different people and different groups of people do interpret time, where you put that on the priority list. So for some groups, respecting time is really important. Like if you said
down to the second, right?
Down to the second. If you're going to be at a meeting at 9 o'clock, then really you better be there ready to go at 9 o'clock. Mm-hmm. So you've actually arrived at 8:55.
Let's get down to business.
And if someone doesn't show up to that 9 o'clock meeting, it's seen as disrespectful. It's selfish.
Absolutely.
You know, if you said you were going to meet and they don't show up, then what you interpret is they're basically saying, your time is not important to me. I'm willing to waste your time because of what I want that made me late.
Right.
But Jerry, as well we know, there are
Did
other.
You just call me Butt Jerry.
Butt Jerry. That was good balance. We were getting way too existential there. So we're going to draw our inner middle schoolers.
Deep breath, Butt Jerry. All right. Continue. All right.
Listen, Bud Jerry. on the other end of the but scale, is the idea that for some people, relationships trump time, and so it's perfectly fine to be late because
it's expected to be late, right?
Yeah, like will just understand
if you show up on. Yeah, if you show up on time, finger quotes for our listeners.
I saw them. I saw them.
Yeah, I know you did. But if you show up on time, you're alone. You're no one else is there. But you're also kind of missing the point of the event. Like this is about people, and people will get here when they get here. And when they get here, then let's celebrate that. Let's celebrate the people, not the event so much. Yeah.
Right. But Jerry, yeah. I also think, yep, I'm just going with it.
Yes, but Chris.
But Jerry, I'm going to completely forget what I was talking about here. But Jerry, I think when it comes to that and those cultural differences and everything, I know for me, for example, I feel very rebellious about time sometimes. In that, for instance,
I'm curious now, like how far does that rebellion are you rebellious regardless? Like if it's a time oriented culture, are you going to show up late? If it's a,
no. Oh my goodness. Oh, but Jerry, that sounds awful. That sounds conflicty. Sounds conflicty, Jerry. And we know I don't do that. No, I mean, I feel rebellious because I often say that I refuse to be bound by a calendar. So one thing, and I think this is common to a lot of TCKs and expats and people who have to deal with multiple cultures and transients and locations and everything, that, you know, just because the calendar says that today is my birthday, I mean, I've had birthdays where I'm in transit. I've had birthdays where I just spend the bulk of my waking hours on a plane. And so I was like, I don't care that this is what the calendar says. I will celebrate my birthday at a more convenient time. I will not be restricted by this calendar. My birthday can it can move around. And you know who you know who showed me that, Jerry?
Who showed you that?
Her Majesty the Queen. Because Her Majesty, she has two birthdays, Jerry. She has two. One, she shares with me. Our birthday is on April 21st. Mm-hmm. But Her Majesty always has the celebration. Look at you. Yeah. I know. I'm regal.
Basically.
But the celebration is always, I think it's the first weekend in June. And so I appreciate, apparently that tradition started way back with, I think maybe Queen Victoria or something, where I think her birthday must've been in, you know, February or November or some month where it was rainy. And they just said, we can't drag people out in the rain. June. Weather's always nice in June. We'll do birthdays in June. And I admire that. I think everyone should exercise some royal prerogative and free yourselves of the confines of the calendar sometimes.
Yeah. I love that. And I think I lean that way it on all of this, like with all of this, there's kind of a spectrum, right? Like there are people who are just like, yeah, whenever, like the moment doesn't matter. And then there are people who are like, no, it's gotta be on the day. It's gotta be, the day is super important. And then there's kind of a range in between. I feel like it was ingrained into me that the day is important. And so still that kind of remains, like the day is important. And at the same time, if something comes up, I don't want to miss the celebration. I don't want to miss the event. And so I'm more than willing to adjust. I've got a big one coming up. I won't mention what number, but I've got a big birthday coming up and a business trip on the same day.
Jerry, are you turning 30?
I am. Yeah. Again and again.
Jerry, I'm so excited.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm excited about that. But it's like, should I take this business trip? Should I say, nah, that's like a big birthday for me. I'm actually excited about the business trip enough to say, let's celebrate that on the weekend. Right. Like let's not put it in a whole other month, but let's be flexible a little bit.
Yeah. And isn't that, but Jerry, isn't that deep down one of the big confusing things about time is that we both want it to be flexible, but we also really like its rigidity. I mean, I think about to play devil's advocate with myself.
Which to be fair is really the only space you feel safe playing the devil's advocate, right?
I'll have conflict with myself. I sometimes wish I wouldn't.
Inner conflict, okay. I don't like it, but okay.
But I'll allow it with myself. Because I think that, you know, even for me, I want to rage against the calendar controlling me, but I will also concede that when everybody does that, you lose something. I mean, I look at Entertainment, I think, is a great example that where before we all had our own screens and devices, watching television shows was a far more of a community thing because you were constrained
on a
because
schedule.
Your show came on at a certain time. And so national dialogue would be about it. And you look at old sitcoms, and by old, I mean way back in the early 2000s. Who was even alive back then? But you look at things then, and you could have running themes that everyone would be on board with, and everyone would be able to discuss the same episodes because you would all gather around in your respective time zones, and so you had this shared experience that was born out of the fact that you were constrained. And actually, with the freedom that we've gained, the fact that now we can watch whatever we want, whenever we want, by ourselves, we've actually freed ourselves from the schedule. But we've also lost, I think, some important points of connection. And so maybe the balance of the two is really, really important. Balance, Jerry.
Balance. And I wonder, like, that's a great point. And I wonder how much, the digital space has actually influenced and impacted our culture and the way that we see it, because you look at the evolution of that, like there was a time when not only did you have to watch your show at the allotted time and you all gathered around to see it, but if you missed it, you don't know when you get to see it again, right? Like that's it. Like you're going to have to wait for reruns, which could be years. But there were no DVDs. Nobody had even the VCR, which you can Google that if you don't know what that is.
Awkward Legends and Rumors.
But like that, but that was on this timeline of time evolution, right? If digital has any impact on the way we view time, like there are some big moments, and that was a big moment when we had the ability to record our favorite show and watch it later and watch it again and again and again. And then with DVDs and DVRs and now we're in this digital space where like nothing is ever lost. You don't, we've moved to a time where you don't have to, nobody tells you when you have to watch your show. You can watch it anytime. But it's changed even in the way that we view television, like the way that we do shows, right? It used to be there was a season. And then in the summertime they take a little break and you can't wait for the season opener in the next one. And but now it's like, we do 10 shows. And it may be like you binge it in a weekend, you catch up on your favorite show, and then you have to wait for 8 months, a year, sometimes 2 years for the next season to come out, right? Like that's not a season. What if real seasons were like that? Like,
what if real seasons,
right?
What if winter was like, you know what? I'm going to go a little longer this year.
I'll be back in a couple years.
I'm taking a few off. We're just going to go
Google me. Google me and Google figure winter out when I'll be back. They'll be talking about me, right?
And I think that's got to creep into the way we interact and the way we perceive humanity as well. Because I think of now, you said it really well. We can collect everything. So time is kind of irrelevant. You can just watch whatever you want when you want. So time has become kind of irrelevant. You don't have to wait for a scheduled something or other. And I think that's crept into even our perception, because you think about now, time is also no longer a good buffer or anything like that. It means that, for instance, a tweet that you put out 15 years ago is now easily recalled. And so, and the thing is, it can be easily recalled, and then you can have a reaction to it in the now. Whereas, I think before we had this much control, for better or for worse, and I think you could definitely make arguments both ways. For better or for worse, digging stuff up from the past was harder. And so the impact was very, very different. I think about the difference between reading letters, that there's some nostalgia attached to that. I can look at letters that I wrote from, or received from like middle school. And maybe just because it's the physical representation of it, I know that was long ago. Whereas, I can look up a tweet from, 10 years ago or something, and because the format stays the same, because, you know, the content of it is updated for whatever Twitter looks like now. So a tweet from 10 years ago displays in the very same font and in the very same box and with the very same icons that a tweet does from now. And so I think that that leaks into our perception. So we begin to perceive things in the now that that weren't in the now. And and there's a lot you can there's a lot you can unpack there. But suffice to say, content, good, bad, and otherwise.
Right. And the content stays the same as it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago, but the context changes dramatically, right? Like the culture surrounding it. And so, and that, that's where I feel like, that's a deep, deep topic. But things said in one context 10 to 15 years ago, don't have a shelf life, because the context and the culture consistently changes, and the, like, the judgment for the content is based on right now. Right. Like, so if you said something that doesn't travel well over throughout time, the implications of that grow and grow and grow as the context and the culture changes. And so people are getting in trouble for things that they said in a different context. And this is not to justify, things that should have never been said, right? Like things some that things shouldn't have been said in any context. To some extent, like there's to play devil's advocate for myself. Like that, it's a good thing that the context and the culture keep changing, because we're actually being held accountable for things that we should have known earlier. We didn't. And sometimes, you know, that culture changes, but, we're learning and growing from those things as our, as the shelf life of our previous comments, really rots and spoils.
Well, and I, you know, you take that even further, and what is this going to look like for trends and things like that? I mean, we do see trends come and go. I joke when I'm talking about my childhood, one of the moves that was really defining for me as far as things that I learned from transition was an early move from the UK to the US. And I dressed drastically differently, because this was in the 90s, the early 90s. And in the early 90s in the US, neon colors had just been invented. So they were a big deal. Everyone looked like they'd been attacked by highlighter and baggy. Baggy was the way to go.
I remember those days well.
It was good times. And the thing is, though, the 90s in the US was one thing, whereas I'd come from the UK. And the UK, we didn't get the 90s until about 2005. And so I arrived in the US looking like a little time capsule. And so now, what I wonder now is, because we've social media and the internet and our connectivity and our ability to archive, we can pull up things and access them so easily, so readily, that it does, it's changed our perception of time. And I wonder what we're going to see that as far as, I mean, fashion trends might be, you know, one example, but I wonder what that's going to do when you remove the element of time, for instance, you know, you update certain things and you don't want them to look, I think technology, I was remembering Apple for a while and all their advertising, they had this slick sort of, they would show you the commercial for the new iPhone, and it would look like it was just sitting on this perfectly clean glass surface with this immaculate reflection and everything. And it just looked so cool. Everything looked like it was just set on this crystal surface, and you could see these reflections. And the funny thing is, I associate that with a certain time. So now if I see that, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's from like 15, 10, I don't know how many years ago. So that style is iconic for that particular range of time. Now we can access everything. I wonder, are we just going to, will all styles just be okay? Are we still going to associate certain styles with long ago? I mean, our bell bottoms, you know, they're iconic from the 70s, but now I feel like they're okay to wear again. And are we just entering a time where time has been removed from our trends? Christopher O'Shaughnessy's wise words on fashion is a statement that will never be said.
Again.
Again. Yeah. It was a leap to begin with. It was a leap to begin with.
Yeah. Have we unpacked fashion yet? We should do that at some point. That would be funny. Like, that would be That's going to get us on the comedy charts if you and I try to unpack fashion.
Oh, I look forward to that day immensely. And you know what, Jerry? Speaking of looking forward, that's right. We're this whole episode is going to be nonstop segues. Mm-hmm. That to me, looking forward, I really do. That really did trigger for me as we're talking about time, just the incredible importance. And this is something I get really nerdy about, Jerry. I'm just going to warn you now. I get nerdy. the incredible. But Jerry,
I don't know. I don't know how many more layers deep into like
do we get to my nerdy core?
Depth. I don't know how far we can go, but hey, let's do it. Let's strike lava.
We're delving. Okay.
All right,
into nerdy lava. I have always been absolutely fascinated with tense. The idea
that is maybe the nerdiest sentence I've heard. Like, if we could have paused, right? I have always been fascinated with whatever, like Dungeons and Dragons, you know, Star Trek, Star Wars, math. Nope.
Tense.
But Chris went to tense.
But Chris has always been fascinated by tense. It's going to be my new marketing tagline. It's going on everything now. It's going on everything. It's the bookings are just going to roll in now.
So, hey, please explain your fascination with tense.
Well, here's my fascination, Jerry. It comes from my linguistic inabilities, as we've talked about, I think, before. I at one point, I'm terrible now. But at one point, living in Belgium, I actually could speak reasonable French, but almost always in the present tense. And I used to joke that it was not a linguistic shortcoming. It was a lifestyle choice. I wanted to live in the now. And so I really could only speak about things happening right now. And if I had to speak in the past or present, I mean, past or future, I would sound ridiculous because grammatically I struggled with it. But it did get me thinking that, honestly, tense, I think, is fascinating because time makes everything work. So the way I picture it is that now is a miraculously infinitely small thing. It's where like the needle touches the record on the record player. And you can Google record players. They're even older than VCRs.
Like you just said that and already it's in the past.
Already it's in the past. Exactly. And just even right listening to this podcast, listening to our voices, the only reason that our sense of hearing and anything works is because of memory, because the now just vanishes immediately. And it's all comparison that, you know, the word begins with a w and ends with a d. And so by the time the d instant arrives, I have to have remembered the w instant. So even language is completely dependent on memory. And I'm telling you, Jerry, depths of nerdiness.
I'm convinced.
Everything we interpret is dependent on memory, because the nows, they just poof, and they're gone. The nows are just these miraculous little moments, the needle touches, and then they're gone. So memory keeps that going. And remembering the power of that tense, I think, is important even in our attitudes, because I think we can all think of times in our lives or people we know who live in the past, who, you know, basically, and I think the common reason for that is they're not enjoying the now. And so they're going to live in their memory. They're going to look back, because back everything was better. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then there's the other direction that people can go where, and maybe for the same reasons, perhaps you're not enjoying the now. And so you idolize the future. And so, and I think both can be very dangerous, whether you're trapped by the past or idolizing the future. They both can be excessive. Of course, to just confuse things further, I also think you gotta be careful with living in the now too, because if you live in the now too much and forget the past, then you run the risk of making terrible mistakes again. You don't learn from the past. You're doomed to repeat it. And if you live in the now too much and don't prep for the future, I mean, you know, that's very irresponsible. Right. You can just have loads of fun in the right now and then end up destitute in the future. So I think I am nerdily fascinated by the intricate balance of putting past, present, and future into the healthiest possible balance. Jerry, you're a wise man, so tell me how to do that. How do I balance
this is the only tidbit of wisdom that I've gotten, and it's not my wisdom. It comes from a shout out to great friend, Dan, if you're out there, you know who you are. He shared with this with me years ago, but it was just the concept of, hey, we're constantly looking back, right? Like we take pictures of everything so we can relive that memory where we get together and what do? We talk about, and you see this, especially I think with highly transitory people who see each other once every 2 years, 4 years, 5 years, right? We get together and we tell the exact same stories. You remember that time we stayed up and laughed until our ears hurt and blew milk out of our nose. That was so funny. And we have these memories. And so there's this sense of always kind of living in the past. And he shared with me a phrase. It's connected. He actually shared this with me before this episode aired. I don't know if you've seen this. This is the U.S. version of The Office.
I'm familiar.
I'm not trying to stir up any trouble here. yes, we stole one of your great shows. I don't think there was ever a British version of this episode, but it's when Pam and Jim get married, and spoiler alert here, but he does this thing where he just kind of holds up a camera that's not there and takes a picture. And the point is, I'm taking a picture of this moment right now so it can live with me forever. And my buddy Dan, he's been saying this for years before that episode aired. He said, live the memory, right? Which I think is just a brilliant perspective, a brilliant way to look at life is that, yeah, we can take pictures so we can remember this later. We can plan and plan and plan so that an event will go exactly like we want it to. But if we're not cognizant, right? Like if we're not aware in the moment, like this is the moment that the memory is being created. And so it's like you take a picture of it, a mental picture of it in your mind, and just recognize the beauty of the moment. Like that's it, because you're right. Those moments are fleeting. They're gone as soon as they happen. And so if there's not an awareness of how rich and beautiful this moment is, then we miss it. Like, right. And again, this goes into kind of the, for the transitory people, for people who, who move from one place to another. And pretty much as soon as we get somewhere, we're thinking about where can we go next? Where can we go next? Okay, so maybe we've talked about this before, but my theory is that there are two kinds of people in the world. There are pillars and bricks, right? Ooh, have we talked about this before?
We have, but say it again, because it's so good, Jerry. As nuggets go, this is a nugget.
This is a nugget. Live this memory, right? Like, don't let this fly by you. So my father was a pillar, right? He planted himself and built things around himself, but he was in one spot. And he stayed there his entire life. And one was his favorite number. It was one of everything. One one place, one job, one woman, till death did they part. And then there was another woman, right? Like, and it was until death did they part. But it was one of everything. And that's not me. Like, and I felt dysfunctional for a long time, wondering, why is it that I can't settle down? Why can't I get the house and the picket fence and the dog and just settle and stay in one place? And then I saw people who had built their lives, built beautiful, stable things, one brick at a time. And they laid a brick. And then 3-4 years later, they laid another brick. They moved on to a new place. And they did that their entire life. And what they had at the end of their life, these were people in their 70s and 80s, they had something every bit as solid and structurally sound and, just really, really stable as my father, but they chose a different path. They chose a different way to do it. And both of those are valid. Both of those can produce something rich, and both of those can produce something that is that you could, push with one finger and it falls over, right? Like, so it matters the material that you build that with. It matters the things that you put around that. And for bricklayers like myself, what becomes really important is finding the stability and like making sure that every brick has the right material, making sure that it's solid, making sure that you do stay long enough for it to set up, for it to be solid. And then there's something beautiful about the next one and the next one and the next one. And that can be solid, but it's not a guarantee. You can, if you build it with something that is not solid, not stable, you can push that over at the end of your life. And it's really a, it could be really not stable as well. You could do the same thing with pillars, right? Like it's not about how you build it or which of those paths you choose. It's really about paying attention to the moment that you're in, to come back to the time analogy, right? And so if you're constantly looking to what's next and you're not content in that moment, then you're going to build something that falls apart. But if you can find contentment and if you can really be present in the moment and be where you are, then you can build something strong and continue to change that, continue to move, continue to switch things up. And, it can be really, really strong and really rich. Does that make sense?
That makes so much sense. I've always loved you. You've shared that, I think, one time before, I think here on the podcast, but I've always loved that illustration so much because it does. It lends credence to the fact that there are multiple ways to do this. And I think even when we look at time, you're right. I think for people in transience, time is a very, very valuable currency and commodity. And you're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. Because of that, we really do. Those friends that you see infrequently, you want to, it's a fun investment of time to share memories together, you know, and that's because time is, it's memories and time in the past. They're a very, very valuable commodity. And I think even that maybe, you know, the idea that time is a commodity, has to do, you know, something with what you said, just as far as the quality of material that you're building things out of that. Yeah. Some people are pillars and that is phenomenal. The world needs pillars. And some people build walls out of bricks and it comes from lots of different places and gets pulled together in transience. But the quality of material really makes a huge difference. And even just seeing time as a quality, I think I often love the concept of a zero-sum game because we misapply it. And zero-sum game, you know, just the idea that there's a limited quantity of something. So if I have one cake and I split it between you and I equally, that's great. But if I want more cake, it means you're going to have less. It is a limited quantity. And we run into trouble in life when we zero sum things that aren't zero sum. Happiness is not zero sum. For me to be more happy does not mean you have to be less happy. We can create an infinite amount of happiness. But time, I think, time gets difficult when you look into that, because I would argue that in many instances, and you can maybe interpret this in different ways, but that in many instances, time is a zero-sum game. And so what you give your time to is really important because time is, it's a limited resource. And by you choosing to spend time on one thing or with one person, you are inherently not spending it on another thing. And I think we run into trouble when we try to evade that. I think we run into trouble when we try to multitask. You know, it feels way less fulfilling to have a conversation with someone when they're multitasking. You know, if we were doing this podcast and one of us was on our phone while we were doing it, you know, I would basically be like, Jerry, get off the phone, focus on this. Right. You know, so Jerry's not on his phone. I just want to point out that was not a backhanded way to
like Jerry focus. Just made me realize that like I've got like 13 minutes left on a Candy Crush run. you keep talking.
You keep talking. Right?
I'm here. No, I'm listening. I swear.
You Candy Crush, and I'll take the rest of the podcast. This will be fine. What could possibly go wrong? Leaving Chris unattended. That has always worked well. that's always gone well. But it's true. We really do. Time is a limited resource, and I think that makes it really powerful because when you see it as a resource like that, it means that you can appreciate when it's invested on you. It means for me, it means so much when someone makes a choice that shows me they want to, I get their time. That's a very, very valuable resource and they've only got one set of it and I get some of it. That's a huge sign of affection, you know? So I think being able to, and we can see that, I think the materials that build good pillars and good brick walls are materials that have been heartily invested, that, you know, you weren't distracted while you were building that brick. You really built a good brick because you weren't candy crushing there at the same time.
Yeah. And there's like, okay, let's keep going down the commodity trail, If we move time into economic language, then all the economic principles apply, right? So you've got supply and demand, right? Something with, high demand and low supply is one of the most valuable things in the world, right?
Yeah.
That's when it becomes valuable. Low demand and high supply, then not so valuable. And
wasn't that, that's even what makes famous people famous is, I mean, yes, it's talent and everything else, but really, in the mix there with talent is just that there's only one of them, but there's everybody, everybody wants some of them, you know,
and the fact everybody that wants only them, one if nobody star, wants them, then they are not famous.
Nobody, nobody wants you. You are not famous. So I can see those economics.
Yeah. Yeah. And so like recognizing that time is like that. And I think what we trick ourselves to into thinking, because time is constant and it's always around us. A lot of times it feels like that time is never going to run out. Like we just have an infinite supply of time, but which kind of time do we have an infinite supply of? And I think this is absolutely something people begin to contemplate as they get older, as they, you know, into their twilight years, and they begin to think about, well, all of a sudden time is not indefinite. Like time, I've only got this much time left, even though we have no idea how much time that is. Certainly, events and illness, there are moments when that is placed right before us, when we recognize the value of our time because of the short supply of our time, and recognize that our time could be over, or even like not to be so grim as to think about death is the only thing that takes time from us, but our time with people, the time of connection that we have with people. And it would be super interesting. I don't think we have time to see what I did there. We don't have time to deal with it right now, but just to unpack the reality of how we see that, how pillars and bricks see time differently, right? TCKs who understand that when they build relationships, it's one of those things that we talk a lot about in this space, right? Like how people who are transient tend to jump into relationships deeper and more quickly because they realize that the timer started as soon as we met. This relationship isn't, while it is going to be lifelong, our connection and our face-to-face experience is not going to be lifelong. And so let's go deeper. Let's go there more quickly. And that can be kind of offsetting in the pillar world. Like, why are you going so deep with me? Whoa. Let's just play a video game here.
We're just playing Mario. I don't need your life story.
Right.
But that's just it. For a TCK, they're like, no, you do need my life story. I need to catch you up on all my past. That way we can enjoy all the now we get, because there's a sell-by date, because every hello is just a goodbye waiting to happen. I can remember in middle school, I went to military schools, Department of Defense schools, and it wasn't until years later that I look back and thought this was really funny. But we all knew the term. There's an acronym, DEROS, your date of estimated return from overseas. And it's a weird acronym for middle schoolers to know, but we did all know it. When a new kid arrived, we would ask, you want to know their DEROS? What is your, we'd never spell it out. It would, as a middle schooler, you'd look really weird if you're like, hey, I'm Chris, what's your date of estimated return from overseas? you don't say that, but you do slip in, and we all knew to slip it in. You do slip into casual conversation. Like, you find a friend who you get along with, you both like the same Mario games or whatever. And you find out their DEROS because then you can plan accordingly. You'd be like, oh, you're only here a year. Okay. We make plans. And I think, I mean, that's almost the, not to take this to a dark place, but that's almost the pain of time. And I think time has a lot to do with pain. I think I think one of the things that actually involves, or that brings our fear to reality when it comes to pain, is actually the time of it. It's, yeah. I think we get really worried, real panic, real fear about pain is some of it is about in the moment, like you're actually, you know, I don't want to feel physical pain. But if we really break it down, I would argue that the bigger fear is really the length of it. The bigger fear in painful moments is really, oh no, is this just how it is now? You know, I think I see memes about it all the time and I relate in a horrible way. You know, I read one the other day that was like, I'm at the age now where, you know, when I wake up with a sore back, I don't know if that's because of an injury or if that's just how I am now. And to me, that's very real, that our fear and pain is actually, well, how long is this going to last? Is this just my life now? And I think for people in transience, but even for people in much wider contexts, you know, that's some of the danger of a bad balance of past, present, and future. That if you are worried that your now is painful and that maybe this is all it's going to be, then that can be something that triggers you to an unhealthy living in the past. Or, you know, I've definitely seen it where as a coping mechanism and as a survival mechanism, people who are in a painful now will just shut down. They'll basically decide the now is bad, so I'm just going to shut down and let it pass. And I'm not saying there aren't moments where that might be helpful, but I'm saying that it's a dangerous, you know, in the same way that we have to be careful with like anesthetic. There's, goodness knows, I love me some anesthetic because, you know, Jerry, my teeth are constantly trying to kill me. And I'm really glad when I go to the dentist sometimes that there is anesthetic. But it is regulated. It's only professional. I cannot just go out and get anesthetic for myself because I can't be trusted. I know a guy.
I don't actually know a guy.
There's going to be letters, Jerry. There's going to be emails asking for your guys' contacts. People, Jerry's starting an anesthetic business. It's happening.
And that's the week Diesel and Clooney went viral.
The end. But there really is. We like anesthetic, but it has to be used correctly. It has to be used carefully.
Absolutely.
You can't just numb everything all the time.
It's so easy to, right? And we all do that. We slip into that when time is not what we wanted time to be. We find a way to numb it. And we've all, like, it's very easy for people who have not gone down a completely dysfunctional trail that has destroyed their lives to be very judgy of the people who do. But I think that's what's common in all of us, is that we all reach for something at some point in our lives that's going to numb the time, you know, going to numb the painful moments, which is not at all healthy. And we all do it, and we're all susceptible to that, especially. And some people find great coping mechanisms and a way to make that solid, and make it through that time. But I think, all of us at some point, maybe slip off of that healthy track at some point.
Absolutely. Well, then, you know, to counter that, because we definitely shouldn't leave on a negative note like that.
Yeah, that was, wow. We went,
that's
we
not,
went.
That's not the Diesel and Clooney way. That's not the way. I think it's worth looking at. So what are positive ways to deal with that? Because in reality, we are all going to have painful nows. We are. Mm-hmm. That's just all there is to it. There's going to be painful nows. And I do think there are legitimate times, you know, when I've had a root canal, and my goodness, that was a time for anesthetic. So it has its place.
Absolutely. But
some things don't. Some things, you know, are it's really necessary to be able to deal with that pain in such a way that you don't just anesthetize it, because then it might not get dealt with. That you actually, you have the proper coping skills to move on. For me, one of the things that I think is a good coping skill, a good mechanism to have in place is community, is shared time. I really do think, for perspective's sake, that shared time does an awful lot. And again, it has its place. When I'm in the dentist chair and they're doing a root canal, I really want the anesthetic. I don't actually want a whole bunch of people in the room there with. Right. That is not the time for. However, I can think of a lot of instances where actually sharing the burden is a huge help. That you have less that you have to numb if you can share the burden around. And so having a community where you can share time, I think, is a really important factor as far as growth, to keep your nose healthy, to know that those painful moments are going to happen, but they will become part of the past. So sharing time helps.
Yeah. And I think, like, if I was to drop a bit of perspective in there it's something that's been helpful to me, I think, and maybe all of us lean toward one of these or the other, but embracing them both can be really, really helpful. I think just the idea of zooming out and zooming in, and both of those, like zooming out from the perspective of whatever this is, whatever's going on, it's a part of a bigger narrative. It's a part of a bigger story. This last 2 years has been tragic for so many people. It has been challenging. It's been stressful for practically the whole world. But to be able to zoom out and recognize, okay, this is going to be under control, even though we can't see it yet, even though we can't, there were points along that journey, which is like, is this ever going away? Zooming out and recognizing that humanity is going to bind together and figure out something, even as we destroy each other and rip each other to shreds and the worst of us comes out. The best of us is going to come out as well. And there are going to be heroes emerge. And it's there's going to be normal again, for me as a serial expat who is currently living in his passport country, I didn't want to do this. I didn't want to be here in this moment, but I'm also recognizing and giving myself the space to be here right now and to watch my son play baseball, which is something that I mourned as a loss as an expat. It was something that was very important to me as a kid. And my son gets that opportunity right now to watch my daughter finish high school here. It's not what we planned. It's not what we wanted, but she crushed it. Like, she did it. And I got to watch her graduate a couple of weeks ago. And it was really, really beautiful. So to live those memories, but to zoom out and to say, that's not forever. We don't have to be stuck in one place forever. There's going to be more of the story, but also just to zoom in and enjoy those moments of right here, right now, wherever you are. And to say, hey, today's a day. Today's got some time in it.
Yeah.
I'm going to do the best with this time as I can. So there we go. We summed it up, man. We fixed up. Time.
We got this. We fixed got time. This. I think we're golden. I think everything's fine. I think
everything's fine.
This is fine, Jerry. It's fine. I think you summed it up well. And I think to cap it off with, I think gratitude is, I mean, if we had to close it with a trifecta, I would say shared time and community, zooming in and zooming out. And then just the power of gratitude. Gratitude, I think, distills time well. And it's important.
Well, I am so grateful for you, but Chris.
But Jerry, I'm grateful for you. I'm grateful for you and the time that we get to invest together. Let's do it again soon. And we want to thank both of our listeners, because you have given us the gift of time by spending this time with us. So thank you guys for that. And
thank you, butt listeners.
Thank you, butt listeners. We'll see you, but next time.